Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program. And time now to introduce the presenter and host of Radio National's Religion and Ethics Report, Andrew West, who is our guest, not just to tell us about the news of the week, but for the rest of this hour. Andrew, welcome.
Great to be here as always, John.
Now, we're about to call this the Andrew West Hour on Sunday night tonight.
Because but it's not a coup, it's not a push.
We're going to talk about the news of the week, and then you're going to introduce us to the biography of one of the great leaders of Australian church history, Davis McCaggie.
I am indeed.
Well, let's begin with the news of the week. The big news out of England was that the surprise result of a vote on women bishops and the bishops of the UK, particularly a loss for the prospective Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby.
A surprise result, and also one that is very shattering for the advocates of women bishops. What you need in the UK to achieve women bishops was a two-thirds vote in each of the houses, the House of Clergy, the House of Bishops, the House of Laity. The advocates of women bishops won easily in the House of Bishops. They won easily in the House of Clergy. They fell short by an agonising six votes in the House of Laity. And this really has set back the cause of women becoming bishops in the Church of England by several years. When we interviewed one of the spokespeople for the women bishops case in the middle of the year, we said, you know, by putting off the vote in the middle of the year, were you maybe putting off this, the achievement of women bishops, not for months, but for years? And she acknowledged that may well be a risk, and indeed it has come to pass. 3 years, I think, is the earliest when they can take this cause up again.
It's a blow for Justin Welby personally as well, because he went out very publicly and spoke for this, and indeed passionately at the Synod.
Well, it's not just a blow for Justin Welby, the new Archbishop of Canterbury, who will be enthroned next year. It's a blow for the current Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, who had hoped to kind of crown a decade as Archbishop with finally achieving women in the episcopate of the Anglican Church in Britain. Yes, Justin Welby comes from what you might call the liberal or maybe moderate evangelical wing of the church. He was very supportive of women bishops. He spoke strongly at the synod in their favour, and yet he couldn't sway a crucial six votes in the House of Laity. I mean, basically, you've got three quarters, maybe even more, of the Anglican Church fully supportive of women bishops. But the structures of church governance are so complicated and, you know, the critics would say frustrating, that six people can sway this decision.
And, of course, that six people in the laity only comes from an alliance between two groups that are traditionally in deep opposition to each other, that is high Anglo-Catholics and low Calvinist evangelicals.
Yes, yeah, super high Anglo-Catholics, the ones who really see, you know, their ultimate future being a union with the Roman Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and don't want to do anything that would in any way, break that potential unity. And yes, very strong evangelicals of the Calvinist variety who believe in the notion of male headship. They don't even believe in women priests, let alone women bishops. And yes, what this has come down to, though, is a question of how would a female bishop cede a sufficient amount of power to a male bishop to oversee those parishes that cannot, in good conscience, accept women's leadership.
For Welby, it also has an international dimension. He's somebody who has a broad focus on the church. He's now got a divided church, not just in England, but potentially internationally, where he is very well connected in Africa, where there's an extremely conservative church in Nigeria, but also in the United States, where there's a more liberal approach.
Well, there's a very liberal approach in the United States. Welby did, I think, part of his training in the United States. I could be wrong there. But yes, Justin Welby has worked as a mediator in Nigeria, mainly where the clash is between Muslims and Christians, and he is very well versed on the questions of religious rivalry and religious division, and he's going to need that because he takes over the leadership of a church that is really riven by this question of sexuality. Interestingly, Justin Welby, who doesn't support same-sex marriage, said in his first press conference, though, that he had been gravitating towards a more inclusive position on gays and lesbians in the Anglican Church. It may fall short of endorsement for same-sex marriage, but he came out very strongly against homophobia, for example.
Isn't it? It may indicate that he's persuadable.
Whether he goes as far as breaking what is generally a unified religious position in the United Kingdom against same-sex marriage, I'm not sure. That may be a bridge too far, but he certainly is moving towards a position that advocates of inclusive ministry would like.
Sexuality has, of course, dominated the news in Australia in the past couple of weeks, and it's the sex abuse crisis in the Catholic Church, particularly. One of the criticisms made of George Pell, the Cardinal Archbishop, was when he came out and said, look, you seem to be picking on us and others, including, quite surprisingly, people who had been working for the Catholic Church or contracted to the Catholic Church, came out and said, well, actually, the Cardinal's got wrong on this.
Well, George Pell is right in this sense, that the crisis, the scourge, the evil of child sex abuse is not limited to the Catholic Church. That's true. All Christian denominations have been touched by this tragedy, and other religions have been touched by this tragedy. There have been scandals in Jewish schools, particularly in Melbourne. There have been problems among Buddhists and Hindus with child sexual abuse. So it is not limited to Christianity and not limited to the Catholic Church.
And not limited to religion.
And not certainly not limited to religion. That said, though, there do seem to be some particular structural problems with the Catholic Church, because the numbers that have been identified, whether it's by the Victorian police or whether it's by studies by experts, show that child sex abuse within the Catholic Church is 6 to 7 times greater than all religions put together. And the Victorian police numbers show that it's 10 times greater than the occurrence of sexual abuse in the Anglican and Salvation Army churches.
And the two people you spoke to with regard to this both had worked for the Catholic Church in regard to this. They hadn't been employed by the church, but they'd worked on contract. That is Professor Patrick Parkinson and Des Carl.
Yeah, Patrick Parkinson, who's not a Catholic, he's a very distinguished legal academic from the University of Sydney. He's written multiple books and done deep study on the issue of sex crimes against children. He came out with a very heavy heart and said that the towards healing process, which the Catholic Church had put in place to try to stem, this scourge, was not working. This is despite the fact that he had great words of praise for its architect, Bishop Geoffrey Robinson, and the woman who now oversees it, Sister Angela Ryan. He's very supportive of their efforts, but he says ultimately, towards healing, while it's pretty good in dealing with the victims, it doesn't actually deal with the problem of offenders if their victims choose not to report them to the police. So it leaves the position of offenders hanging there if they're not reported to the police. So that's its failure. Des Carl, a former Catholic priest, now an academic at RMIT University, a psychologist, he goes even further and says, look, there are structural, maybe not doctrinal, but structural and structural problems and customs in the Catholic Church that are contributing to this scourge of sexual abuse of children. And it goes to the, well, quite frankly, to the heart of compulsory clerical celibacy, where you've got closed, oppressive or repressive structures. It contributes to it.
Andrew West, there's one other thing we need to touch on with you before we introduce your guest for the evening, and that's very briefly a summary of religion in the United States election campaign. Barack Obama is now president. There were lots of forecasts about the impact of Mormonism, the impact of evangelicalism. Where did it all go?
Well, it went pretty much as it went in 2008, and that is Barack Obama, according to the exit polls by the very respected Pew Foundation and its project on religion in public life, Barack Obama still won 58 still won 50-48 in the religious vote as well. He actually won a narrow majority of the Catholic vote. Now, many people had thought that because he was basically involved in a pitched battle with most of the Catholic bishops over the contraception mandate in his healthcare law, that Catholics would desert him en masse. Not at all. He won, according to these figures, he won 50% of the Catholic vote. Mitt Romney won 48% of the Catholic vote. And John, there's a rather interesting little wrinkle in this as well. Quite fascinating given the circumstances. You have Mitt Romney, a Mormon candidate, the first Mormon candidate for presidency. He actually got slightly less of the Mormon vote than John McCain did in 2008, only about 1%. But I think in 2008, John McCain won 80% of the Mormon vote. This year, Mitt Romney won only 79% of the Mormon vote.
We'll leave others to sort out the entrails of that one.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. Thank you for listening.